In light of the potential tax reform bills, both the House and the Senate, our very own Steve Krasanich sat down with Brett McKittrick, Senior Vice President and Senior Human Resources Consultant at Associated Benefits, to talk about the possible effect on both the future of employee benefits and retirement savings.
Brett, good morning. Welcome back to the Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me back.
We were talking about open enrollment numbers. This is, you know, the annual thing that most employers put their employees through. I saw a story this year that said employees usually lose out in this regard because they don't have enough information to do this. And sometimes it could be thousands of dollars. Do we need to improve open enrollment?
I think so. I think, you know, a lot of companies do a great job, but communicating benefits is very, very difficult. You know, sort of a mantra in the employee benefits field is poor benefits communicated well are better received than better benefits communicated poorly. And this is just case in point. Sometimes the default settings for someone's open enrollment period as to what maybe they would naturally matriculate into as an employee isn't necessarily what they want. And the HR and wellness benefits committees at their organizations sometimes don't do a great job in communicating maybe what a change might be or providing the education and resources to help an employee determine what might be best for them and their family.
How do we improve that communication? Because, you know, in some places, if you choose the wrong thing or don't choose the wrong thing, your cost could be quite high. I mean, is it just the company needs to do a better job?
That's half of it. I think it's a two-way street. And I'll give an example. At Associated, I feel like we do a really good job communicating our benefits to our employees and communicating what those changes from year to year might actually be. I'm an ERISA attorney at heart. I've written health plans. I've practiced in this field for 17 years. When open enrollment time comes around, I wait until about the last day, bring home all the stuff, and hand it to my wife. I'm not very good at filling out forms. Yeah. I really don't have the patience for that kind of stuff. So here I am, someone that probably knows as much about health insurance as anyone in our company. We do a good job, but it's still on me to actually participate and try to find the best solution for my family.
The deadline is usually November 15th. Those are hard and fast deadlines. Do we need more time to do this?
Enrollment periods generally for organizations are maybe 2 to 3 weeks. And that for calendar year plans, which most organizations have, employers have, they might be in the middle of October, middle of November, somewhere in there. The trouble is, I think research has shown that if you give people more time, they still don't necessarily take advantage of it. And they'll sit on it until the end, like myself as an example.
We're all procrastinators. Yeah. We all procrastinate no matter how much time we're given.
I think you're exactly right.
The other news that's out there is Obamacare signups. That enrollment is underway too. Politico reported that over the first week or two, it's up 24% the enrollments are over last year. With the news hanging over Obamacare like this, the Affordable Care Act, is that a good thing that we're seeing that many enrollments?
You know, I think it is a good thing for the industry. And what I mean by that is this is probably the last year that you'll see health insurers provide individual coverage at the same model or within the same model that they have since the Affordable Care Act came to be, and especially since 2014. And the reason why I say that is sort of the idea that the government has provided funding for health insurers to help them sustain the coverage that they're able to sustain in the individual market will go away. So in that regard, the health insurers will next year, if Obamacare remains, we'll have to provide insurance under a different model. And that doesn't mean anything for you and I, maybe as individuals purchasing that insurance, but it may change the marketplace naturally. So I think when you see this kind of demand for it, it may force the health insurance carriers to develop those models because they do see themselves as, hey, still being a player in those particular areas. Mm-hmm. Certainly over the last year and the last couple of years, we've heard in various states health insurers pulling out of the market, others coming into the market. I think this year to next year, if Obamacare remains the same, we'll see that market stabilize a little bit.
We also hear, too, nationally that from the White House that Obamacare is withering on the vine. That's one of the phrases, dying. It's struggling. Do the numbers give you an indication of whether that's actually happening or not?
It doesn't seem like it in the individual marketplace. However, you know, the Affordable Care Act was really set up to either succeed or fail following President Obama's presidency. And if a Democrat had come into the executive branch, it would have progressed onto the next step. And, you know, in a perfect world, no matter what party, it may have progressed into something better. Mm-hmm. We're in a situation where Congress and, despite not being able to find a resolution, Congress and the executive branch in our current state doesn't like Obamacare. So as a result, they're looking to take some parts away from it, if not take the whole thing away from Americans. And when you see that kind of change, more or less for the sake of change in some regard, you may not see it progress to what it could have been or what it may have fulfilled itself to be.
In the workplace, are people who are signing up for the Affordable Care Act and on, are they generally freelancers and part of the gig economy, or are there some companies where people are on Affordable Care Act?
Yeah, there are some organizations, employers, where their employees are taking that individual coverage through the exchange or marketplace. The thing is, there still exists an employer mandate where if you are an applicable large employer, which only takes you to be 50 full-time employees or more, you are charged with the obligation to provide affordable coverage to at least 95% of your full-time workers and their dependents. And if you do not, you could be faced with the possibility of paying one of two types of penalties. Those penalties will only be triggered by one of your employees, you know, to whom you should have offered coverage, going to that individual exchange and purchasing individual coverage. So there's a yin and yang there. And I think you see, while you do see some employees going to that individual market, I think over the last couple of years, you've seen employers that still want to be in the health insurance business really make a concerted effort to offer coverage just to avoid the potential of those penalties.
So for the time being, people will have coverage for another year probably.
Yeah, it sure looks like it, you know. And so because the individual marketplace is on that calendar year or tax year cycle for 2018, it sure looks like that'll be status quo.
There are a lot of ifs in Washington with tax reform underway. We don't want to get too specific about this discussion because it's changing daily. It seems there's something happening. But there are a couple of points that we wanted to talk to you about. Part of this is retirement savings, 401k, benefits that might be cut. I know student loan interest might go away. How do these things weigh on what employers offer their employees in terms of benefits?
Yeah, it makes it difficult for employers to decide what benefits to provide. You know, employee benefits, whether it be health insurance or retiree benefits or some ancillary benefits, they're all part of an employer's overall compensation package to the employee. And really, health and retirement are the two biggest things outside of actual salary or wages provided to that employee. And when they're thinking about maybe from a strategic plan standpoint over the next year to next 5 years, making changes in those benefits, trying to become that and maintain that status as an employer of choice from a recruitment and retention standpoint, this sort of, you know, with tax reform being in flux and this unknown with regard to the benefit makes an employer's job even more difficult to sort through what they should or shouldn't do from an employee perspective.
Let's play a what if game. Mm-hmm. What if the 401k went away? How would an employer replace that, do you think?
Well, it would only be one half of the 401k going away. What was proposed was the pre-tax contributions mm-hmm. to the 401k plan going away. And while that doesn't look like it'll happen now, that was certainly on the House and Senate side as a real possibility. What would have remained was the Roth after-tax contribution. So in other words, I make a contribution after tax now. In other words, I'm taxed on the principal going in. My earnings, hopefully there would be some by the time I reach retirement, would come out tax-free, and I've already paid taxes on that principal. So while the more common approach to a 401k investment is that pre-tax investing, it would shift all the focus to that Roth investing, which, like a Roth IRA, is just another strategy.
The pre-tax, we've heard a lot of people talking about how many employers actually take advantage of the pre-tax 401k.
Yeah.
Do you have any stats on that? I mean, how many people in the workplace do that?
I don't have any stats in the aggregate, but I can say it's probably 3-1 as compared to the Roth after-tax contribution. And that would really change the game. And a lot of economists feel like it may discourage people from actually participating because they're so used to that pre-tax notion. Mm-hmm. Now, with that in mind, there was a Yale and Harvard white paper or dissertation presented a couple of years ago showing that there really isn't a difference in participation levels if a company only provided a Roth plan. Now, that's You know, who knows? They're getting their data from someplace, and someplace very valuable, I would imagine. But in the real world, seeing organizations and seeing what employees resonate toward, it is still pre-tax in this era.
One of the other benefits, too, that one of the other problems that employees have these days, saving is that they're loaded with student loan debt. I found some stats that show 37% of U.S. households headed by adults younger than 40 have student loan debt. The average student loan debt for, let's say, a student in Wisconsin is $29,000. Pretty standard across the country. That's a lot of student loan debt. How are employers helping, or could they possibly help their employees with these issues?
Yeah, and certainly as we see a turnover in the workforce from a multi-generational perspective and more of the younger and millennial generations coming into the workforce, you see that student loan debt only increasing, to your point, Steve. And so how employers – right now there is not a tax-free method to provide relief from an employer to an employee from a student loan standpoint. Whether it be a reimbursement or forgiving loan or paying off directly to the creditor. We've seen some of those bills or parts of bills bubble up in Congress. It's been part of tax reform, although not really a priority on both the House and Senate side at this point. We're starting to see employers say, the heck with the tax benefits. We see this as a need for people. And what we would like to do is still provide more or less a taxable benefit of $5,000 to $10,000, let's say, to help people stomach those student loans and get out from under that rock.
It would be almost part of the hiring benefits package, just like vacation.
It absolutely would. And it's really about meeting the employee at their place of need. And we have seen these needs grow over the last 5 years, and the statute you mentioned sort of show this, that if an employee has this particular need, it's more than maybe a mortgage right now. It's more than maybe a car payment right now. We're seeing people go away from actually owning cars and actually owning homes because those entering the workforce right out of college are under this tremendous debt.
And going forward, too, it's so many of the people are under debt. Do you think it's something that would actually prevent a worker from going to work for a company if all of a sudden we started seeing them compete in this area? If like one employer had this as a benefit and the other didn't, do you think there's going to be a competitive nature to this?
I think it certainly can be, and I think we're going down that road. It is all about being that employer of choice and the benefits you offer, trying, as I said earlier, to recruit and retain the best employees. And if you have employer A not offer anything in this area, employer B offer a $10,000 instead of a signing bonus, a $10,000 loan forgiveness, or you work for us for 2 years, we'll contribute $10,000 to your student debt. I think we'll see that.
Brett, always good conversation. You have big plans for Thanksgiving?
I'm going away with family, traveling a little bit.
Nice. We'll have a good Thanksgiving, and we're always thankful that you're here with us.
All right. Thanks a lot, Steve.